Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. My name is Elliot Morgan. I do stand-up comedy as well as internet comedy. Depending on when this goes up, by the way, I'm going to be in Wisconsin, Stevens Point, Wednesday night, October 17th.
The Stevens Point. My goodness, I've always wanted to get there.
The Mecca. It's hard. It's the end of the pilgrimage.
It is the comedy Mecca.
Yes.
That's what I've heard.
Going to the University of Wisconsin dash Stevens Point.
Did you say that right? Is it not?
No, I didn't say
West
that right.
What?
University of Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I said something different. Anyway, yeah. This is The Fundamentalist. This is a podcast where we talk about all sorts of different things. I do it with my podcasting partner and housemate, Peter Rollins, who is a writer and a philosopher and a speaker. And yeah, we're going to explore some stuff today. If you would like to support this podcast or help us out in any way, you can go to trywink.com/fundamentalists. That's TRYWINC, and Wink is a company that will tell you what kind of wines you like. And then you can order them and they look cool. Anyway, so now that that's out of the way,
Pete. It's good to see you, by the way. I just flew in. I just got in from Atlanta, and
let's set the scene.
I got in. I was traveling all day, 4 or 5 hours, no, 6 hours, and I was exhausted. I thought I was just going to go straight to bed, but then we got chatting. You poured some drinks, and here we are recording a fundamentalist podcast.
Now, at what stage, Pete, did we decide to do a podcast in the chat we were having?
Well, it was about 5 minutes ago, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because something very monumental happened when I was away. While I was away, and I texted you to say, oh, how's life? How are things going? I'd never expected to get the response back that I got. Yeah. This was even probably bigger than the story of... the catfish woman.
Yes,
this
yes.
is, although not unrelated, funnily
uh-huh.
enough.
Yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Oh wow. Honestly, I could never have guessed this. I could never have guessed what was going to have happened.
It's, you know what? I could have. I think.
Did you see deep down? You felt this was going to come and bite you in the ass
at
some point.
I knew at some point, and because only everything bad that I've ever done in my life has come back to bite me in the ass mm-hmm. in some way. I don't think I've gotten away with anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got roasted by a guy named Ethan Klein from H3H3.
I'm a very big fan of H3H3.
I think he's
by
great.
The way, they're very funny.
Oh my god, so funny.
Know. Until now, you know.
Until now, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Got to stand up for my friend.
Throwing beef. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Pete. So anyway. He did a video where, basically, to give you some context, back in the day when I was after I'd had a divorce, I was in a dark place, I ended up taking a job where I hosted a reality show for TLC, thinking this will never make it to air or make it to series, and if it did, I'll, you know, take the check and go off and do comedy. And so anyway, the pilot was filmed and then they aired it, and that was bad enough, but it wasn't that big of a deal. And then it got uploaded to YouTube recently by TLC, and then it got picked up by some YouTubers who properly roasted it, and it was a show about catfishing, how not to how to protect your kids from getting catfished, where you catfish the kid.
So basically this is a pilot for a show where the parents
yes.
catfish their own children.
Yes.
The parents flirt with
to try to prove
their own kids.
Yeah, to show that they're being unsafe or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, if you're listening to this and you're thinking that sounds horrible, well, of course it's horrible. It's awful. And when I did it, I was like, well, I definitely was like, I'm going to do this and let's see what happens. And I took the check and I ran. And so anyway.
And I, by the way, and I knew Elliot at this time. Mm-hmm. And I remember him doing this show and he didn't talk about it at all. It was like, yeah, I'm doing this, this thing. And it's about catfishing. And, you were
even
never exactly overly excited about it.
No, no.
The first time I ever saw any clips from it was actually yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never seen it. But I quickly realized they were making it very serious because they told me when they brought me on, I was like, the only way I'm gonna do this is like if I can really be myself and like be sarcastic and be on brand. And they were like, oh, absolutely. We want you to be completely like yourself, which is always what they say. And I was like, okay, great. And then very quickly it became like this super dramatic thing. And I was like,
Oh yeah. God, they played up the
drama. I'm doing that. Yeah. I'm doing that thing. I'm that guy. anyway, so I get roasted. My feed just blows up. I have not experienced that level of like internet hate in since probably 2012, I guess.
Well, right in one top. Day, in one day, I think it was 2.4 million views on this video. Like these guys, H3H3, and what are their names? There's the couple,
Ethan and like Nina or something like that, or some kind of a I don't know her name.
Okay,
Hina, I think.
Okay, yeah, I don't
it's
know.
Some
I just
kind of
know, I've just watched them. All I know of the Maz is H3H3, but they're very very good. But yeah, they're massive, and they have so in one day like 2.5 million people. So from one day, just everything's normal, everything's fine, and then the next day, 2.5 million people watch this roast.
I remember seeing the first comment on an Instagram post that I did where it just said, Ethan is at H3's roasting you right now. And I was like, oh no. And I knew exactly what it was. I was like, this is gonna be a big deal. And like I was like, here we go. And it was it almost felt like I was like, shit, this is going to be a long day. Is what I was like,
this is going to be a long life.
And like, I'm at the Valley Folk and like, we're filming stuff and it's fine. And like, Steve and Lee and Joe are running around. And like, Joe comes up to me at one point and I was just like, hey, man, don't say anything just because I'm still processing it. I was like, but this is about, I'm getting blown up right now by H3H3.
And did he know when you said this?
No. And he goes, whoa, about what? And I was like, well, it's for that effing catfish show I did, and he was like, oh no. And then I was like, yeah man, it's pretty bad. And then he like goes to the comments and like he starts going through and he bursts out laughing and he's like, this is the funniest thing that's ever happened. And then it became a very like funny thing, and I was like, yeah, it's like, just, you know, it's also incredibly embarrassing, so please don't bring it up. And so anyway, it all blew up. My feed is still blowing up, and here we are, and it's a very embarrassing thing, and it's a very hilarious thing. It's a very hologram-esque thing, because this is a running theme in my life where these weird things tend to happen that I completely had control to not have happened and responsible for. And so we're going to explore some of this stuff. And it's gonna
so
be fun.
Just to get, I'm gonna give my reading of just what happens in the show so people know what the show's about. And then
you know what, let's just play the video. Hold the mics up.
I just want to enjoy your embarrassment here.
I'm
gonna do a 45 minute description of the horror of this show. Mm-hmm. So basically, you have a child, you have like a 14-year-old girl.
I don't, but I'm gonna catfish. Oh, you're talking about it.
Yes, I'm talking about the show.
Not yet, Pete, I'm working. Do you want one? Okay.
Well, that's appropriate for the show.
Yeah.
Because there's a 14-year-old girl. The parents are nervous because of all the predators that are out in the world.
Nervous with quotes around it, but yeah.
So what's that?
Nervous with quotes around
it. With quotes around it, yes. So they start to talk to their daughter, pretending to be a 14-year-old boy. And you give them coaching about how to flirt with their 14-year-old daughter.
Well, when you say it like that, it doesn't sound good, Pete.
And then you take the iPad away, and then you continue to, well, you're the production team, obviously.
We should add for context, 98% of pilots never get aired.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out there, statistically speaking.
Yeah, so you guys, you know, continue to develop this. Invite her to a park.
And there's a gazebo.
There's a gazebo. That's very important. If you watch H3H3, the gazebo is very important. the fake kid Martin invites the real kid.
Oh jeez.
Oh yeah, they to the gazebo.
That was such terrible crap, man. Oh, you know what happened too? I talked a little bit about this on the Valley Gas, but like they tried to fake it from me. I was the only person not in on it. For the majority of it.
Oh, is that right?
And then one day I was at the place and I was like, what's that? I was like, she's right there. And I was like, she's texting. I'm like, it's her. And I was like, oh, does she know? And like the person was like, and I was like, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like, don't make this so dumb that you're faking. I'm the one being catfish.
Yeah.
I think I was the one that was catfish.
Well, you're the one who was being kept in the dark. This is hilarious, right?
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I was definitely the one getting with the wool over my eyes.
Yeah, because you went in as a comedy host going like, this will be a lighthearted thing. They made it serious.
Not lighthearted, but at least pretty hilarious to do. Like, an experience. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, so this girl then goes to the gazebo in the park, and then you invite her to get into a van with you, saying, like, oh, Martin, that you were supposed to meet, isn't here, but he's close by. Get into this van with me, and I'll drive you to Martin, the fictional guy who's really her
parents. I feel like without seeing the video, hearing this description makes it sound even worse.
Is that right? Well, no, but the good bit is, you know, as soon as she kind of says yes, which the parents come out and say...
Because no kid would get that far. That was the problem, because the kids were so smart. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, is that right? Yeah. I mean, of course, this is reality. This is the funny thing that people don't understand. See, this is made up. It's all made up.
It's all fake.
It's all fake. Oh, you probably can't say that. You've been paid.
I mean, I say it was fake. They were trying to trick me into thinking it was real, which is kind of funny.
Well, but I've heard that happen. So I have a friend, just as a quick aside, my friend Vince in New York, he was on Jerry Springer once. And he was on Jerry Springer.
I'm very curious about this.
He was just invited on because he's a really good musician, Vince Anderson, brilliant musician. He was playing some music on a street corner, and Jerry Springer's people came up and said, listen, we need a pimp party. This party that we're like, there's some sort of like crazy pimp who looks after all these prostitutes. And Vince has a really distinctive look. So he's also a reverend, right? He's a minister. But he was like, he's totally up for it. He's just this crazy guy. And so they put on this whole party. It was all completely fake. But the one person who didn't know it was fake, now I do this in inverted commas, is they would never say to Jerry Springer that it's fake, because he had that plausible deniability. So as far as he was concerned, everything was real. Everything was real.
Wow, that's so now, weird.
Of course, he didn't, in a sense, but they would never tell him. Well, at least for this show, they would not tell him that it was fake.
That's kind of the caliber of the production we're looking at.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
Like bottom of the the barrel.
Well, I quite liked it because there was a moral dimension to this setup, which was, you know, be careful who you talk to online.
Yeah, they tried leaning into the morality more as they went on, and I was like, well, it's also, you know, it'd be much funnier if we leaned into the funny. Fact of
course. Well, H3H3 lent into that.
It is nice too, because now it's like there's a sense of freedom, because now there's not a lot that I can really be cringy about in my life ever. This is the last thing. It's sort of like the last.
This is potentially, and this is the first thing we wanted to mention. We had thought of three dimensions, but you know, I think we've talked about this before. But for a lot of people, there's the physical death and there's symbolic death. And physical death is when, of course, you die. And symbolic death is when your reputation, your symbolic self, your persona dies. And for many people, they would rather physically die than have their symbolic self die. But in one sense, you said your first experience, whenever this blew up, the first thing you were going is, it was an experience of a symbolic death.
It really was. Not to put too fine of a heady spin on it, but it definitely was like it sucks. Like, it's sort of like you're getting, because I'm getting punched nonstop online, as I should be. Like, it's worthy of being made fun of, and that, which is why I totally support the video and everything, and I support the response sketch that we're filming tomorrow. Like, it's, of course, make fun of it, but then I have to go through the process of that, of it being worthy of being made fun of, and then I have to be the guy who did something worthy of being made fun of, which relates to sort of a little bit of what we were talking about, which is this sort of the symbolic death, and then also as just like a dude who's 31, who's got like a real good situation going on, still having that constant fear of like, oh, I'm not enough, oh, this is like the like, oh, I'm an embarrassment, I'm humiliated, and then that's like that feeling that strips away the 31-year-old man and just leaves the sort of like kid that's just like, I was needed money or whatever. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, that kid's still in there. And then, you know, you move on.
Because we're all one experience away from that. You could be, you know, you could be managing the Fed. You could be like, you know, you could be a prime minister or a president. And one thing happens, you stub your toe, and suddenly you're that little kid again, you know, like, so it's, we're all kind
it's
of
all
like,
just a house of cards.
Yeah. You know, I saw an advert once which said, we're all three paychecks away from being homeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, and we're all three paychecks away from our symbolic identity being ruptured.
Yeah.
You know, that's, we're one paycheck away from that.
So yeah, that, and then we kind of, from there, like from doing that, which was years ago that I did this, this terrible pilot. And I thought, you know, I keep thinking it's going to go away, and then I get catfished by someone whose mugshots were used in the promotional materials for the show. And then the show itself gets uploaded to YouTube, which is my domain, which means it gets picked up by my community of creators. And then the whole time I'm like, there's this other element to it where you're like, you know, I've done all these things, worked really hard, got a company, got, you know, my life in order. And life is incredible. Mm. And so one part of me is like, well, if life is this good and I got to get made fun of for some shit I did on TV, all right, like whatever, that's part of it. But there's another part of it where it's like, I don't think I would be here had I not made certain choices back then. I still shouldn't have done this pilot, but that type of behavior is what led me to, it was that sort of like survival, yeah. Total, just like, ah. Yeah.
But here's the other thing is, like, the Irish and comedians are two races in which...
The Irish and the comedian are two racists.
Two races.
The description, welcome to the fundamentals.
Yes, that will be cut and put out all over the world. No, two races of people, the Irish and the comedian, who self-deprecation is part of the lifeblood. So a lot of people, when they encounter a symbolic death, it destroys them. Like, you know, their reputation is in tatters. But comedians constantly self-deprecate. Like, good comedians constantly go up on stage and tell you something crazy that happened in hospital, something, some crazy mm-hmm. operation, some crazy embarrassment with sex, something, you know. Like, wonderful thing about comedians is all of the things, we are terrified of symbolic death, but the Irish are very good at self-deprecation, I think, the Northern Irish. I say very good at it. I'm showing off about how good we are at
self-deprecating,
taking the piss out of ourselves. But comedians are great at going, like, you know, I heard a comedian, I can't remember who it was, but Dane he was Cook. Talking about, what's that?
Dane Cook.
Dan Cook.
Who's Dane that? Cook.
Dane yeah. Cook.
No, who's
Dane
Cook? He's just kind of a bro.
I've got some terrible comedians from the UK I could make a joke about, but nobody would know them in America. So, but he was making a joke about some, like, embarrassing stuff that happened to him during an operation or something in the hospital. And I was like, oh, this is amazing, because so many people will have had a similar experience and will go, I will never talk about that in my life.
Yeah.
And then a comedian makes a joke about it, and then you feel more relaxed and you go, you know what? It's not that big a deal. I can talk about it. So, you know, maybe you're doing this work, you're doing this thing, you know, maybe the cosmos went, you know, you got to remember that you're a comedian, and so I'm going to get like 5 million people over the space of a week to watch
to
you,
tell you what
fall
a piece
apart.
Of shit you are.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a comedian thing or if the cosmos was like, you're having a good time. Things are going pretty well for you. Let's try this. How's 8,000 tweets about how you're a horrid human being?
That's amazing. I get one of those. I hardly ever get any of those. Oh, one a month, God. One a year.
It's interesting, the ones, too, that cut. Because obviously, some do and some don't. Most of them are just like,
The ones from your family were the most painful.
The ones from my family, yeah. I think in the sketch that I was...
And your friends.
The sketch I was like, the tweets aren't painful at all because... My friends are comedians, so they're way more precise and hurtful in their insults toward me.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, that's what it is. It's fun. But it's a fun time. The internet, it's destroying all of our brains, and you know, whatever. It is what it is. What can you do? I do think this is not happening, which is the comedian thing of like the story, I think it's Ari Shaffir made the show, but I'm sure you've seen clips of it, but this is not happening is, oh, I'm getting a divorce. Oh, I'm out of money. I'm going to do this TLC pilot. Nobody will ever see that. Oh, no, went to TV. Oh, no, I'm getting catfished. Oh, no, that person's mugshots were in that. Okay, well, I'm sure that's done. And then also now it gets picked up by colleagues who I respect in my own industry when all is said and done. It's like the final kind of like, this is like the end credit scene if my life was like a Marvel movie. The catfish story was a movie, it would be, this is the after the credits thing. I'm just like, oh, and everyone, okay, great. Everyone
this is the old great. Saying where rock bottom has a basement.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, wow, this can go lower.
And even the whole getting catfish thing was so, that was an immediate hilarious thing.
Oh, yeah.
If anything, the worst thing about that was just the legitimate fear, but and the terror of, you know, that I was, oh my God, that's so funny. It's also just like, of course, this doesn't happen. This is not a thing that happens.
Yeah.
This is not a normal thing.
No, you see,
happen.
Here's the reason why this is so, like, Right. So kind of our first point about symbolic death, this is why this is so important to you. So, like, you'll be able to make another 1 hour special out of this.
I know.
Maybe you're going like, I never want to talk about it ever again. This would be hilarious if I was ever going to speak of it, which I will never do.
Actually, you know, I think I may have, anything I've ever said to myself, I'm never going to talk about this, has become the end of an hour long.
Oh, special. Yeah, that's right, exactly.
And so, yeah, there's a possibility for that. But here's the thing, I'm good on material for my next hour.
Well, yeah, you see, you've got a lot of material. But you know what? Always good to have some in the back pocket.
You know, correct me, I have no material. I have all the life experiences to draw from.
Not many people, by the way, can turn around and say, oh yeah, I was roasted by pretty much the biggest couple on YouTube. Like, that's a pretty amazing. Like, 2.5 million people on the first day watched me make an ass of myself. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. I'm so envious of that.
This is this is one of those things you always worry about. It's going to change you on like a molecular level. And I think I already was changed on a molecular level, because when it happens, I was like, there was almost a fight in me of just like, bring it on, bring on the hate. Like, let's do this. Let's enjoy. Let's have fun. It. People were like, what's in your zipper pocket? And I was like, more kids are in my zipper pocket.
That's good.
I'm doing all sorts of fun, fun stuff.
Yeah. So like, this symbolic death then, 2.5 minutes. This is amazing. This is great.
You know what's
material.
Interesting too? After it was found out, Thursday was a bonkers long day. And then we had this long business meeting on Friday, and bunch of shifts are happening in the company to try to keep it going, mm-hmm. try to get that Patreon back up and get that momentum going. And it's all really good, but the combination of getting a lot of that stuff sorted and then this happening, this symbolic death, mm-hmm. I have been between Friday and today, like literally like so much more creative and energized than I've been in like 6 weeks or something. So yeah. I don't know if that's related to the symbolic death or if it's me undergoing it like on a small basis really quickly or something like that. And I'm just still processing it on a macro scale. I don't know, but it's a very nice, like there's a lightness to it. And yeah, it's just like, who gives a shit, man? It's fun.
Well, you've also, by the way, been able to fold this in. So although we talk about the symbolic death that I think it's important for us all to go through, if you don't go through it, you start to, you know, you just live in this fantasy world. But the great, the way to avoid the horror of it is to see the humor of it, is to realize that we are not the symbolic structures that we create. We're not these kind of ideals, etc. So what you did very quickly is you were like, you saw the humor of it. You're going like, this is brilliant. This is funny. You know, this is something that, that I can, you know, and you do look very checked out during the show. Oh my goodness. I've never seen that side of you, like that's on the show where you
vacant.
Just, yeah. You just look, the lights are on, but no one is.
That's exactly
home.
What Joe said. Joe's like, the look on your face is like, you could not care less.
Yeah, you're having an out of body experience. You're at the pub. You're like, but you're,
you know what? I think I may have
pub.
Been. Yeah, I think I may have been having an out of body experience.
Yeah. You did, like, because I know some people who have out-of-body experiences and you looked a little bit like that. It's like, because the person almost, it's like they're looking at you, but just slightly looking past you.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you know someone's not new, but gives you a hint that someone might be elsewhere.
Yep.
It's like they're slightly focused just a foot behind mm-hmm. where you are. And that's the look that you had on your face while you were doing it. I mean, it wouldn't look more obvious to me if you had a t-shirt saying, please kill me. Would have just kind of like,
yeah, please catfish me.
Please, you know, somebody.
Yeah, that's a bad time, man. Just, you know, too, it's the worst are the self-righteous people. The worst are the people who are just like, I can't believe you like did that and like stooped to that level. Cause then you're like, that's the thing where it's like, well, I guess I did. Yeah. I guess I did do that terrible thing. But then the most of the other stuff, the fans and the audience that the Valley Folk has and that I have been hilarious.
Oh, like, that would be amazing.
Truly funny. And I can't, and it's just like, there's so many, it's interesting when, like, you know, I somewhere along the way I've done some right decisions, because the very fact that like there are people who watch my stuff, and then when stuff like this happens, are so, they get it so much. Oh, like, yeah. Even people were messaging me, and they were like, dude, you can tell you're like, don't care. You're like, yeah, dry. You're being sarcastic. Like, it's not being.
If anyone goes for you, you have a wall of people there, and I'll be on the front line of them. But like, you've got like so many people who'll just be with you.
It's
like,
so sweet. You know? It's so nice. And it's like, it's also just like, okay, this is fine. And it's like, thank God, because man, if I did not have the Valley Folk or the Fundamentalists, or like, if things were at the level that they were then, now, and happened, oof, that would be actually very bad.
You know what? This brings us to the second point, actually, because the first thing you said is people here are saying, oh, I can't believe you did that. When we were talking about it, I was like, hold on. The thing about this is, in a sense, the second thing is it reflects what most of us have to do in life. Most of us have to compromise and work for companies we don't believe in, work for less than we should be getting, to be underemployed, unemployed. Like, to be honest, the world of work is 99% of people are having to debase themselves. And it's a sad reality. And it's funny. So in one sense, I think what you were doing is a symbol of actually what the majority of us have to do in life, which is make compromises.
Yeah.
And compromises that we aren't necessarily happy with. And if we don't have to do that, which is virtually, I don't actually know if anyone can do that entirely, but if you can, that's sometimes a victim of your circumstance, a lucky victim of your circumstance.
Sure. Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, having done a television pilot that's incredibly embarrassing and cringy is not the worst case scenario for, you know, needing to do something to make a living. But there is, while I appreciate the sentiment of, you know, you do what you have to do to survive, and I definitely have done that, so I can't, that's great and good, you know, pat on the back or whatever, there is, you know, an ethical and moral repugnance to it that I do feel a tinge of guilt about. But at the same time, that lasts for like 3 seconds, because I remember agreeing to do it and being like, this shit is so stupid. And like, immediately having a sense of humor about it, and also like, whatever. But like, there is that, it, going back to the self-righteousness, the people who are just that, they have that kind of moral high horse where they're like, this is like, which also speaks to their gullibility and their, you know.
Whatever. Oh yeah, that they think it's real.
But anyway, it's funny. Yeah, I wonder if, man, I hope TLC is just getting torn apart for this shit.
And I like that. Like, see the experience you had where you're like, you know, because you had it at the time, you're like, I don't know if I buy into this, except as a bit of a laugh. It's like, I think that is symptomatic of how we should all feel about work. Like, if we're working for a company, you do not have to dig too much to find ethical repugnance. You know, you don't, like, for anything. Like, I don't want to even name companies, is it? Because it's almost like you name a couple and you go like, you could name. I'm actually looking out the window right now and I'm seeing Enterprise Car Rental. I know nothing about Enterprise Car Rental, but if I worked for Enterprise Car Rental, I am sure I could, within 10 minutes, find people being mistreated, or like cars being used that are built in like sweat, you know, the parts should come from sweatshops, or some of the materials come from the Congo, come from kind of conflict situations, or, you know, I could within 10 minutes of searching on Google could find that there's a lot of ethically compromising dimensions to that. And I think neither you can't opting out or just saying it doesn't matter. It's like, you in some way have to navigate that.
Yes, it's difficult. Also, that was, I appreciate your communist propaganda.
Thank you. Yes.
Smooth and way to go.
Yep.
Really getting that.
I do have a picture of Stalin in my room.
Yeah, oh, absolutely anti-capitalist.
But it is Stalin with three fingers. It's a very, very rare propaganda poster. Anyway.
And that the guy died over, right?
I think he was killed.
It's rare. It was rare for Stalin to do that, right? He wasn't.
Well, really. Yeah, he wasn't one for killing people. Yeah. You know, just occasionally.
Led with a soft. Yeah. Soft touch. It's great, guys. What a fun time. It is what it is. There's not really a lot more to say about it. Like, at the risk of,
we had one more point.
I think there was, and I'm kind of, I'm, yeah.
Oh, death drive. Not death drive in a very negative sense. So we wanted to look at symbolic identity, which was, you know, the experience of you lose a little bit of who you are or whatever, and then it's fine. Two, that we all
you lose a little of your core.
Yes.
Your soul breaks away and drifts and gets smashed to pieces. And he gets 20 to 30. I think he had 30,000 YouTube comments.
Is that
comments?
Right? Oh my goodness.
If we get 30,000 views,
I hope more than a little of you died then. That's a lot of comments. That should be a good 35%. Well,
not many were about me. That's what, like, oh, not that right? All of them were about, yeah.
Not all of them were about me. That, I like that. That's out of the 30,000, there were some that were about other things.
Hundreds that were about other things. Can you imagine?
So that was the symbolic identity. Oh, yeah. Then the second was the go ahead.
Sorry. Joe commented on the H3H3 video as the Valley folk, and he just said, don't worry, Ethan. Elliot catfished us, too. Yeah. It was really good.
Oh, very
and
good.
And then I commented on it and from my account, and I just said, crushed it.
I know. Listen, I want to rename this the gazebo.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, honestly, I could never have guessed, if you'd asked what word will be associated with me until the day that I die, if you asked me that 1 week ago, I swear to God, I would never have said gazebo. Yeah. I wonder, there'd have to be more of me than atoms in the universe before I got to the word gazebo.
Yeah.
You know, but gazebo is now associated with you, man. You're going to have to make it your new middle name.
It wouldn't take you that long to get to gazebo. You'd categorize everything, and eventually you would get to outdoor, you know, park recreational.
That is boringly true. I wonder how many words are in the...
That's boringly true. You know, that's true. That doesn't build on a conversation that we're having.
I wonder how many new words in the English language are. Anyway, yes. But regardless, gazebo, I would not have guessed it first time.
Yes.
I would have been more likely to win the lottery.
Well, that's the hologram thing. But the point we're making here, besides Unzip the pockets. Mystical... sense of humor that the Lord has, huh?
Yeah. Oh, and Zip Pocket.
And Zip Pocket, yeah. Which, oh, and I think I told you we have the shirts that I'm wearing in the sketches, zippers.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'd have to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't even have to tell me.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, of course. The final thing was self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage, that sometimes when we're in a dark place, we do things that if we were in a healthier state, we would maybe say no to. And you potentially were kind of in an interesting spot in your life at that time.
Oh yeah, that was the bad times. Those were the bad times.
Those were the bad times.
Man.
Those were the medieval years.
People at the time were like, I don't think you're in a good spot right now. And I remember being like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But I didn't know I could be this happy.
The truth is, we don't know. That's the crazy thing. That's why in retrospect, we can look back and go, oh my goodness, I was really depressed then. I didn't know. Like, people think depression's subjective, like you know it. It's not. It's objective. It's like you can sometimes be depressed and not even know it. But other people know it. That's the weird thing.
Yeah.
You can feel fine, but other people can go, oh no, it's depression. So weirdly, depression isn't necessarily something that you know you are.
Dude, I think that happened to me like a week ago. I think first of all, this thing cured my depression, thank God, because it wasn't that at all.
Oh, you know what? They put out fires with water, but if it's a really big fire, they put it out with fire, you know, an explosion. And it's like, this lifted you out of depression, which was because it was such a massive...
Yeah.
Rupturous event,
yes.
You know?
Yes,
you know?
So it just jostled me. It was like just putting the... taking me out. It's like that game in Plinko and Price is Right, where it goes... And so the disc just went, everything got restructured basically.
Yeah.
Terrible analogy. But anyway, the self-sabotage thing is absolutely what was happening at that time in my life. I self-sabotaged constantly. It was not, I self-sabotaged relationships. I sabotaged career stuff, stand up. The marriage didn't go great. So there is that. I sabotaged the marriage, and then so it was a period of complete, and I think I tend to do that. I think I fight the urge now I'm starting to recognize and be like, oh, this is me doing it. It's me shooting myself in the foot again.
This is the key, and I'm going to be in Boise, but this is probably after this goes out, maybe not, but I'll be in Boise and I'm doing a paper on psychoanalysis, Jordan Peterson, Jung and Freud, right? So very exciting stuff. But my main argument is...
main thinkers of our time.
Yeah. and it's a critique of Jung and Peterson. But it's partly to do with this. It's like this self-help type stuff that tells you, you know, to clean your room, get your life together, et cetera, et cetera, doesn't take into consideration the fact that sometimes and often we can want to self-sabotage. We actually want the worst for ourselves.
Yeah, it's really true, Pete. It's true.
Yeah, and
it's when not a lie.
Yeah,
man.
When I watched that Catfish show, I was like, oh, this is the perfect. This is the empirical proof of Freud over Jung.
Yes, I absolutely thought. I was like, well, this is, if there is no proof that there is an unconscious driving force that is trying to sabotage me in many ways, this, I mean, it's like absolute cookie cutter, just put out before me, and it's happened time and time again in my life, where it's like, it feels like when the Lord gives you signs, it feels like my unconscious is just being like, look, man, you wanted to get to know me. This is the shit I'm up to. It's not great, and I'm going to take you for a spin, and it's going to be not good. So I had to fight. Now I'm developing the fighting mechanism, which I don't know if that's Freudian necessarily, but I'm on board with the Freudian thing of the unconscious not always being benevolent.
Yes, right, yes.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. And yeah, and because that's the empirical proof, that show.
Yeah.
And you know what? Funnily enough, like Ethan, who's somebody who I really like, like he's very honest about his depression, and I think he'll be able to appreciate that dimension, is that how when you're in a certain space, you can just not want the best for yourself, the people you love, the world around you, and you can get into a weird hole and do things that, you know, you might otherwise not do. Because he's been very honest about that dimension of himself. So
yeah, which is why it made me happy that he was the top dog who did this, unless Phil gets on or just says some bullshit. If Phil does some shit, no, he won't do anything.
Phil's been a big fan. Phil's promoted you guys twice.
He's been amazing. He's been great.
Big, a big shout out to Valley Folk,
and he's killing it, and for good reason. Because he's, at least business wise, what he's doing, I think, is great, and his show's great.
He's actually one of the few YouTubers that I watch when I got into YouTube. You know, there's ones that I like, but he's one I watch his new stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed watching it.
He's working hard. I think he's definitely like, he's hiring different people of literally like, I don't know, it's kind of like you always see these people, and you can see sometimes, at times you can be like, well, you're not exactly what, you know, you're kind of espousing a brand that maybe isn't, your heart isn't behind, I guess. Yeah. And I don't see that with him. I when I look at him now, I see a very, he really is attempting, I think, to make something different and unique, and it seems to be working really well.
And
which is
valuable.
Cool.
I mean, yeah, I genuinely really appreciate it. I connect with very few news sources now, and I'm very skeptical about obviously journalism sadly today, but
it's bad, Phil, man. It's bad.
It's a bad, it's, I started, a bad state.
I was watching more Fox
Tucker.
News.
Yep.
Tucker.
Yeah.
Did you see Donald Trump tweet out Tucker and say congrats to Tucker?
No. What happened?
Just congrats to Tucker Carlson on his number one best-selling book.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, very good. Oh, yeah. Good old Tucker.
Good old Tucker. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Sorry, you were watching more Fox. I was actually doing that for a joke, but actually you were like, no, it was actually Fox.
Yeah. So I definitely the other night was like, I want to feel you know what it was? I was like, I think
you want the truth.
I want to feel
smarter. You want objectivity. I just please give me objectivity.
Yeah. Give it to me straight. Give it to me nuanced.
Yeah.
Hit me with it. And I watched some of it just because it definitely was like, I need to feel smart. And it made me feel smart. It definitely, there is something to watching Fox News and being like, nope. It's like shooting.
Yeah. You know what?
I can't say the same for the others because I don't watch the others.
I know. Well, here's the thing. I was very prejudiced against Fox News, having never watched it, right? And then I watched it and I saw, you know, the problems with it. But
the problems being
problems with
all,
you know,
the lying
that,
and
that
the
it's
propaganda.
Only one. Well, it's only one channel. It should be five. No, but there are problems and there are issues and there's propaganda. But my main problem was that Baudrillard, philosopher, he once said that the thing about Disney World, right? People think Disney World is a fake world, right? Which makes you think that the rest of the world is real. And Baudrillard said that's exactly why how Disney World functions. It functions as a fake world to make you think that the world you're in is real, but the world you're in is fake. But by having this fake other world, you start to think that the world you're in is real. And I think for a lot of people,
fun.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's interesting because I think for a lot of people, Fox News works like that, in the sense of Fox News creates the illusion that other news channels are real and promote objectivity. But in one sense, I think other news channels use the fakeness of Fox News to propagate the illusion that they are objective. And I was very confused because in one sense, I've watched other news channels and I've been very disappointed.
Yeah, I would say all of them are pretty terrible. Yeah. I do not like it, but I can't say
go back to the BBC.
I will say that content-wise, Fox seems to rely on the critique of other news sources as their primary talking point, source of talking
points. Yeah, that's
a good point. CNN, or even if they're biased, they're at least talking about real things, and Fox News feeds off of the content. They're actually like, I think if anything, my biggest problem is that beyond the sort of, you know, horrid things that they say sometimes, there's the fact that they're just derivative. Like they are a result of the other stations.
You know, I have never thought of that, but I was watching Fox News actually this morning in my hotel room.
And okay, so now it's starting to sound scary. We should clarify that it is, at least for me, entertainment and also a glimpse into the other side.
Well, yeah.
Morbid curiosity.
It's fascinating. No, I think you can learn a lot from all of these sources.
Fascinating is the right word.
But what you're saying, it was derivative. Like one of the things I was watching was it was a news program about a CNN, some clip in CNN.
That's all it is.
So it was within. I do think CNN occasionally do the same thing back, but maybe not to the same extent. But anyway, the whole thing's a little bit messy. And Fox News, I think, can be, because it's like the Disney world of journalism, it can weirdly create the illusion that then the rest of journalism is the real world, but it might also be a bit fakery.
How accurate that is, I think, is a very good metaphor, because if going with the derivative thing, Fox News is sort of secondary or tertiary to the other. It is within, because it's influenced so much by the other, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Or something, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, we should do something on Baudrillard sometime, because this way of thinking is very, very interesting.
That's funny. Well, it also plays into my, like, we're in simulation and, you know, you do a catfish show, you get catfish gets human, you know, it's insane. So
His views on marriage are very, very interesting. So, where were we going on that one then?
That was a fun tangent. I don't know how we got there.
That was going somewhere.
Yeah, no idea. But it, you know, we could talk about where were we.
Oh no, you brought up Fox News. Why was it?
I don't know.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, I don't care.
As long as we covered like the three. Whenever you told me about the gazebo story, the three things that came into mind were. Oh, that's an experience of the rupture of the symbolic self. So it's a good story about the symbolic self.
Which is just another term for humiliation.
Yep. Yes. It was a good story about how, in a sense, what does it mean to be a person in the 21st century, to be that we're always morally compromised when we buy food in the supermarket, when we work, when we do things.
Oh, that's interesting. We are always morally compromised.
Yeah.
Even when we are doing, when we are acting passively and not making conscious choices, we are acting immorally.
Yeah. I mean, this is the point back to Foucault again, is the reason why then people can attack you is because somebody says, oh, you're, say, morally compromising yourself or whatever, and therefore we're not. You know, we can kind of like, we can kind of put all
Disney
of
World.
That onto you. Yeah. Disney World, exactly. It's a Disney World. Whereas for me, it's rather a reflection. It's like we're all morally compromised and we have to work out how to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, like a good example is a nurse going into a room of 100 people who are sick. That nurse has to, in a sense, forget about 99 people to concentrate on one. So they're almost kind of being horrible to 99 people. Mm-hmm. Like, why are they choosing that one person? But in order to be moral, they also have to be immoral.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this moral compromise as part of being human. How do we navigate that? And then the third point was, this is a good example of what we talked about in the previous three fundamentalists about, or the series at least about the drive, is that, oh, we can act in ways that we kind of, some weird way we know is detrimental, but we still do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
because, and I knew then on some level, and I think that's also a truth about the unconscious.
To me, and it was only in retrospect, but I remember when you talked about it, like, for example, I still don't know the name of the show because you didn't tell me the name of the show. You talked about it maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
And it was just so
very
obvious.
Ashamed from the get-go of doing it. And also, under bad advice and very like being told, you know, this is a good move and I'd be, you know, crazy not to do it and that whole thing. But ultimately it was my decision, and I also ultimately knew it was a bad decision, but
in retrospect, I actually didn't think it was that bad. Yeah. In fact, I was kind of like, so even now I go, I think it would be a question of, you know, do you do something like that? And just,
yeah.
Because here's the thing, you said it at the beginning, but it's like everybody's kind of in on the joke. The only people who believe it naively or some viewers.
Yeah.
We've probably talked about this before, but like, you know, something like the Keeping Up with the Kardashians, there's half the people maybe watch it because they want to be like the Kardashians. I actually don't even think it's half. And then the rest of the people watch it because they get this pleasure of imagining that there are naive people who believe it. So there are these ironic hipster viewers.
They watch it because of the people that... Yeah, it's the Bachelors. The Bachelor.
So
everyone thinks this, they're really falling in love when everyone else is like, what's happening is everyone's making fun of it. And everyone's roasting and teasing and making fun of these flaky people.
Yeah, and the only way you can make fun of it is if you imagine that there's some naive person, whether it's in the show or watching the show. But here's the thing. Like, you could hypothetically have a show where everybody is completely aware of the ridiculous nature of it, but we still construct a fantasy figure who naively engages with it. And in terms of viewer figures, an ironic viewer and a naive viewer show up the same way. You know, it's exactly the same. So that's how the show works.
You're still looking.
My favorite comedians, Mitchell and Webb, have a fantastic skit on that, and people should look it up. Just type in what's that show where you're fired. I think Donald Trump ran it,
The Apprentice.
If you type in Mitchell and Webb and The Apprentice,
great,
you'll see a great skit that basically makes this point, which is that we engage in these shows imagining there's some naive person who believes it, but these shows are not naive.
No, they're not. No.
You're telling me, are you allowed to say, like, even the kid was knew what was going on?
Oh, yeah. The whole point of the whole thing is, like, at the end of the day, we're all in the gazebo.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking the dad did
look like he was trying to do fake annoyance.
He did, yeah.
He did look like a bad actor trying to act like he was an annoyed
father. Oh, it was cute. He was trying to... They're sweet people, but, yeah, he... Acting wise, yeah, they weren't Oscar winners. I was hoping when you were talking about the Kardashian thing, you were just gonna go, but the thing with you is you also did a Kardashian show.
Did you do it? You did.
Yeah, man. That's why none of this is even.
Can that be our next Fundamentals episode? We should maybe do the Kardashian episode.
Oh, we just become a reality television exclusive podcast about philosophy and comedy, and somehow it all still works and is based in fact.
Too many interesting things happen to you, man.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's the thing. I'm done. I'm good.
You're good. Like, you're finished.
I'm fine.
At 30 years old. Please.
Dude, I figured it out, man. I know what my trajectory is right now. My trajectory is work real hard, try to write some funny stuff, and then you get that made. But I have to stay in a hole. I gotta stay in my apartment. I gotta I'm gonna be safe. I'm done. You're out.
Okay.
I'm cured. I'm not gonna do anything. I remember telling this to my parents when I was like 8 years old. I'm not gonna do anything. I'm not gonna make any more mistakes.
Yeah,
that's it.
Oh yeah.
Now I know.
Okay. No. Well, let's see how long that lasts. Yeah. But I definitely we have to do one Fundamentalist at some point about the Kardashian episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Kardashian scandal. Oh, and I also want to do one on the grievance affair. We'll have to do one of those.
Dude. We were talking about that before we left. The grievance affair. Holy crap! I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait
to delve into
that. That might be
something special. That might be something extra. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We should figure out a thing for that that's not maybe podcast exclusive, but still Fundamentalist.
Fantastic. All right. Well, cool. That's great. Any takeaways?
Yeah, man. Plenty.
Don't do a catfish series.
Don't listen to your manager when you know deep down that's a terrible idea. I guess don't catfish kids. That's a good one. Don't get catfish. Been there. Here's the thing, guys. I've been the fisher and the fisherman, and I can tell you neither are fun. And also, when humiliating things happen, whatever, you'll be fine.
That's very good. That's a good takeaway. My takeaway, yeah, similar is like, yeah, it's good when our symbolic selves are a bit ruptured. We're all living a morally compromised universe and have to navigate that. And also we do sometimes self-sabotage and have a bit of grace for yourself.
Yeah, love it. Thank you very much, Pete. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye, gazebo.